It's episode 225 of the Kaiju Podcast. I am your host, Chad O'Brien, and I have a special treat for you guys because, well, you know, we've had that little on-again, off-again relationship where we had the one week with Chris Charlton and then the other week with Jason Gibson. Well, it turns out that both of them are not here today. it turns out, due to various scheduling issues and whatever, it turns out I'm all alone with you guys today. But I hope you will indulge me and lend me your ears for a series of minutes that will, I'm sure, not number more than 60, because there's not too much to talk about, because this week in news, we're waiting, because on the launch pad, on March 3rd, waiting is the Nintendo Switch, and it's gonna take off. That rocket will blast into the sky on March 3rd. That is this coming Friday, so a day before the next episode. I'm not sure. I do have mine pre-ordered. I'm not sure how much I'll be able to talk to you guys about it next week, because I will be picking it up Friday night due to, you know, my work. But yeah, there are plenty of play reports out there already, because members of larger press pools than we are have managed to get their hands on it, such as IGN and Giant Bomb and plenty of other places, and it seems to be matching expectations. So I have no problem believing that this will be a successful launch. It will take off, but the issue is whether it will remain in low orbit or whether this will be the thing that takes Nintendo to Mars, space. Right. So we have some data, you know, like there's all kinds of pre-orders have sold out everywhere, but that's just, it's kind of typical these days. So I wouldn't really take too much stock in it. Even if the Nintendo Switch is amazing, I think Nintendo is really looking at sort of a long tail kind of situation. And that's why we've talked about this for several weeks on the program. Nintendo is trying to kind of pace out their releases, with Splatoon coming in summer and Mario Odyssey coming in the holiday season. But That is what the Big N is up to. And there's not a whole lot to go on, as I said, because another thing we are all doing is we're in full award season, as I'm sure you all know out there. We're just waiting, looking at the Academy Awards coming up, and you might have missed the fact that there were another set of awards more geared towards our interests. Academy Awards, of course, very interesting. I'm looking forward to see. I'm not a big fan of La La Land myself. Personally, I'm looking at things like Hacksaw Ridge and Arrival. Looking forward to those taking big awards. But we do have gaming awards as well. For over the past week, we had the DICE Awards. These are the 20th annual DICE Awards that were held this week, and DICE definitely has like a lot more kind of professional clout than the Game Awards. The Game Awards being the big show that Jeff Keighley puts on at the end of the year, and thus basically excluding any game that doesn't come out before December. So the DICE Awards are actually industry voted. Well, they're all industry voted, but yeah. We have the DICE Summit, and there's all kinds of professional talks and things going on. But yeah, this is for me, yeah, the more professional one. But I would actually like to go over some of these and just talk about what we have, what what was special in 2016? Of course, we had our own Kaiju Pop Awards, and those are the definitive awards. You can go check those out on our website at kaijupop.com. But we have some interesting entries in these lists as well. So I'm just going to blow through a couple of these, only talk about them if I think they're really interesting or something that kind of, I don't know, something that felt kind of more important. So there are a lot, but like I said, we'll just kind of breeze through these. So we have the Outstanding Achievement in Animation goes to Uncharted 4. Absolutely, they had wonderful like facial animation, bodies, and everything. Everything was great in there. Outstanding Achievement in Art Direction went to Inside. Again, not a surprise. That was just a beautiful game from start to finish. In Character, The Last Guardian, Trico. And It's a very important thing to bring up because, yeah, many people did have problems playing Trico, or not playing Trico, but playing alongside Trico, kind of getting it to handle, and there was a lot of speculation over whether that was intentional or if the AI was just completely borked, but... like him or hate him, Trico definitely did have a personality. And you had to kind of wrangle it and alter how you played based on the feelings of like this gigantic bestial cat. So that's an interesting one there. Outstanding Achievement in Original Music Composition went to Doom. No surprise, that was an amazing soundtrack. Outstanding Achievement in Sound Design, Battlefield 1. I can't say anything, I never played the game. I'm sure it sounds lovely, or visceral, or whatever. Outstanding Achievement in Story, Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. This one, the other contenders were Firewatch, Inside, Oxenfree, and That Dragon Cancer. Out of those, I would be inclined to agree that Uncharted 4 got it. Although I'm not entirely sure there weren't better stories. I can't think. I'm doing this live and like just offhand, I can't think of some of the more amazing stories. I mean, for me, Persona 5, obviously, but that didn't come out in the West in 2016, so obviously that wouldn't count. But Uncharted 4 did have a very good story, but part of me is just wondering if this is, because it's the final chapter or something like that in Drake's story. But anyway, it was a good game, don't get me wrong, but I think there were a few better stories that year. So, Outstanding Technical Achievement also went to Uncharted 4. I'm sure this would kind of stick with Chris, because he was not happy with several of the things in the game, such as the fact that, ancient pirate boxes had casters on the bottom to roll around. Action Game of the Year went to Overwatch, which will surprise very, very few people, I'm sure. Other contenders were Battlefield 1, Doom, Gears of War 4, and Titanfall 2, but I don't think anything kind of resonated with the public more than Overwatch. And of course, this isn't just a popularity contest, but Overwatch was really well done as well. It looks good, it sounds good, it plays well, it plays amazing. It inspires teamwork. It rewards your supporting behavior. You don't have to be the best at the game. It was just great. It's a good action game. Adventure Game of the Year goes to Uncharted 4. Again, the other things were Firewatch, Inside, King's Quest, and The Last Guardian. Now, if we're talking about a strict adventure game, I would give this to King's Quest over Uncharted 4, because Uncharted 4 is the action adventure genre. So, I'm guessing action is more shooter now for the DICE Awards, and adventure is the action adventure. But genres in today's gaming, we've talked about this several times, it's just so muddled these days. Family Game of the Year goes to Ratchet and Clank. can definitely see that. Fighting game of the year goes to Street Fighter V. I have no opinion. I don't know. Racing game of the year. There were only two competitors this year. Drive Club VR and Forza Horizon 3. And it went to Forza Horizon. Probably because that's an actual... well, not original IP, but an original title instead of just a redone edition of a current game out. I know Drive Club, for anyone out there wondering, Drive Club VR was built specifically for the VR, but it's still based on like the same engine and everything. Role-playing / MMO game of the year went to Dark Souls 3 over Deus Ex, Hyper Light Drifter, Tom Clancy's Division, and World of Warcraft Legion. And Dark Souls 3 was absolutely amazing. It had all kinds of new systems as well as throwbacks to the other two games, or even Demon's Souls, so three games, or Bloodborne's four games. There were all kinds of references and takeaways from those games, like compiled into a kind of gestalt. Like it worked because it had all of these great, you know, the great things from these games were brought back into Dark Souls 3. So that was really good, and it was Miyazaki coming back to the series. So sports game of the year went to FIFA. That went to Steep, which is actually kind of surprising for me. I've literally not heard anything about Steep. For those who don't know, Steep is Ubisoft's winter sports game. You're up in the Alps, but, you know, European mountains somewhere. And you can ski, snowboard, a couple of other things. Can't remember. But you can basically winter sport yourself all the way around the different mountains. And I'm not saying it's a bad game or anything, but I have literally heard nothing about this game since it was released. So either good or bad. So it just seems kind of weird for a game that gets no attention to win this award. But I say again, it's not a popularity contest. For all I know, this is the best representation of its sport. It did beat out FIFA, Madden NFL, MLB 16, The Show, and NBA 2K17. And I will give it something. It is a new IP, and it's been a long time since anyone has had a good skiing / snowboarding game. Strategy / simulation game of the year went to Sid Meier's Civilization VI, which probably, again, surprises nobody. Absolutely amazing achievement there. So, immersive reality technical achievement. So this is your VR award. And this was kind of a surprise for me. This went to Eagle Flight, with the other contestants being I Expect You to Die, Job Simulator, Superhot VR, and Tilt Brush. Out of these, I would have expected either Superhot or maybe Tilt Brush to take this. Superhot is a kind of shooter where time only moves when you move, so it kind of becomes a puzzle game as well because you have to dodge bullets by moving out of their way. Tilt Brush is kind of a VR art studio, so your entire room can become a little art studio. You can craft, paint, do all kinds of things right in your room. Eagle Flight is another Ubisoft game, so there you go, there's another surprise, where you control an eagle and you have a kind of 3-on-3 game where you're supposed to take things and throw them into hoops, or carry them into hoops. I forget which. It seemed like an alright game to me, but I don't know. It didn't seem like anything super special, but there you go. Congratulations, Ubisoft. Like I said, that's for the technical achievement. The actual immersive reality game of the year goes to Superhot VR. The other choices were Eagle Flight, I Expect You to Die, Job Simulator. This is sounding very familiar. But instead of Tilt Brush, we also have The Lab, which I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it. Super Hot VR takes it, though. Good for that team. The Dice Sprite Award. My list might be... Is that really Sprite? I could be wrong. There we go. Yep. Okay. The Dice Sprite Award. Yep. Making sure. Yes. Sorry. So the Dice Sprite Award goes to Inside, and the other contestants were 1979 Revolution, Black Friday, Firewatch, Superhot, and That Dragon Cancer. The Sprite Award is given to those who have kind of low resources, so it's kind of like the Indie Award. So you have fewer resources to make your game, but you still make something that is awesome. There you go. Your Indie Award. And it goes to Inside, which, yeah, again, totally understandable. Inside is an amazing game. Handheld Game of the Year goes to Pokemon Sun and Moon, I would have given it to Fire Emblem Fates or maybe Severed as well. Pokemon Sun and Moon, it did change some things, but it still felt like more of the same. It's fine, but I'm getting old, tired of the formula. Mobile Game of the Year went to Pokemon Go. Pokemon Go. The other contenders were Clash Royale, Crashlands, Gardenscapes, New Acres, and Rains. I suppose that Super Mario Run was not good enough. I don't know what to tell you. I don't do much mobile gaming myself, except for Fire Emblem Heroes, which obviously was not in the running because it wasn't out then. It came out in February. So there is that. Going on, we have just a few more, four more. We have Outstanding Achievement in Online Gameplay goes to Overwatch. No surprise there, for reasons I already talked about earlier. Outstanding Achievement in Game Design goes to Overwatch. Again, see above. Outstanding Achievement in Game Direction goes to Inside. Over 1979 Revolution, Black Friday, Battlefield 1... The Last Guardian, and Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. And I can definitely see this. Inside tells a story without telling a story. Like, it's all visuals, and at the same time, every single thing in the game is important in some way, and it's up to, like, players to figure out how it's important and how to use that. Very, very amazing direction from start to finish. Good game. And Game of the Year out of Battlefield 1, Inside, Overwatch, Pokemon Go, and Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. The Game of the Year went to Overwatch, which is well-deserved. So, congratulations to the team at Blizzard, or Activision Blizzard, or just Blizzard. But, there you go. That is Overwatch. Now, let's go ahead. Like I said, there's not too much to talk about this week. Just a couple of really small things. For example, Nintendo is... For people in Japan, you might have seen in Tokyo a group of people driving down the streets of Tokyo in special go-karts that look suspiciously like Mario Kart go-karts. The people driving them are also in costume. Now, this has been going on in Tokyo for years, but apparently Nintendo is finally, I don't know what took them so long, seeking to shut them down. They filed charges against the company, I think it's Marika, Mario Kart, so Marika, for obvious reasons, for, using their imagery and stuff without any permission whatsoever. It's amazing that Marika never sought that Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they did and they were turned down. But anyway, Nintendo is going after them now. Some people have speculated this is because of Nintendo's plans starting to go into motion of them making their own theme park, and they'll probably have their own kind of Mario Kart there. So this is one of those issues where you kind of have to fight for your trademark or copyright now, because it could lead to bigger problems down the line if you don't. So it still kind of sucks for Marika and for anybody who was hoping to one day drive those go-karts around the city. Knowing how powerfully Nintendo goes after anyone who tries to get around their copyright rules, this will probably not end well for Marika. I'm not saying that they'll end up, shelling out a lot of money, but I can't see them really continuing that. Although, they might just try something else, use like gorilla costumes or, and it's not Donkey Kong, it's just a random gorilla or something like that. But there you go. That's Nintendo. A couple of other things are related to the games I have been playing, so why don't I go into those? So we had Nintendo. That was one big N. The other big N's, one I just finished, was Neo. So I managed to get through the final few missions in Neo, and that is an absolutely amazing game. You can definitely look forward to a review this week. So it is absolutely amazing to me that we have had this many grand games within just the first few months of 2017 coming out. So we had Resident Evil 7, which was stunning. The West got Yakuza 0, which by all accounts is amazing. I haven't actually touched it, but people are saying it's great. Next week we have Horizon and the Switch are both coming out, and that's going to have Breath of the Wild, and from everything I hear already, that sounds like a grand game. Horizon is already doing well on Metacritic and everything. And of course, like I just said, Neo is stunning. I loved it from start to finish. It is extremely dismissive to just call it a Samurai Dark Souls, even if it is somewhat apt in the description. This game does a lot to set itself apart. This is a definite kind of, this is a rise for the Team Ninja. The Team Ninja team. So they haven't had an amazing title since Ninja Gaiden Black, but Neo is fantastic. Like I said, it sets itself apart by doing several different things, such as its immersive loot system, where you get all kinds of different items that can really shape the way you play the game, whether you're going to do more magic or you're going to try for a barehanded run. And that's something you never see in Dark Souls, obviously. You kind of set yourself into one play style from the beginning, and that's how you go. Whereas in Neo, I kind of felt, by the end of the game, I felt that if you weren't at least a little bit skilled in everything, you're kind of selling yourself short on the game. Because, sure, you can put a lot of points into the stats that will affect your damage with swords and become a master swordsman, and that's fine. But you're going to eventually need your living weapon. I mean, I'm talking about normal people, not the guys who are going to do the, I'm sure they're already trying the playthroughs where you just never get hit. Of course, there are speed runs that are already like 90 minutes long of Neo. I spent 70 hours in mine. But you're going to need your living weapons. You're going to want to use magic and ninjutsu. So you're going to want to put a lot of points into every kind of stat. So by the end of the game, I actually had near 20s across the board, and that was an amazing little, like, just discovery for me. I thought from the beginning I would just be, I would only worry about my armor and my sword. And by the end of the game, I was a magic casting Kusarigama wielder. So much of that game is steeped in actual Japanese history, and some of it is taken with, you know, creative license, but, it's very obvious that they care about the story that they're telling. And it shouldn't be that big a surprise considering that this is coming out of, Shibasawa Ko, who basically got his whole start doing Nobunaga's ambition, and so this game is all about, like, the Nobunaga era. So, again, no real surprise that he would know what he's talking about when it comes to these games. But Neo isn't just a critical success, it's apparently a commercial success. It's reached over 1 million sales, which is incredible when you realize a couple of things. For one, just all the amazing games that are coming out over these weeks. That can definitely put a kind of... people might not want to buy a certain game because they'll want to buy a different game. For example, Nier or Horizon or the Switch. And so they'll be like, okay, I'm going to hold off and not buy this game. Then there's the fact that it is a brand new IP. It's from a developer with a history, of course. But it's a brand new IP and... it's also only on a single platform. This did not come out for Xbox One or PC. It's actually published by Sony. So I don't know if we'll see it on PC or Xbox One anytime soon. But, right. One platform, new IP with all this other good stuff surrounding it on all sides. And still, it reached over 1 million in sales worldwide. So that is... really awesome. I'm glad to see it getting such success. And I hope we'll see Neo 2 within the next 3-4 years. Let's go on to the other in I've been playing, and that is, kind of mentioned it earlier, Nier. So Nier came out this week in Japan. It is already out. It's not out yet in America. I forget the actual Western release date. So for people waiting for the Western release, I'm going to keep my talk about it as kind of spoiler-free as possible, which isn't too hard because, personally, I've never played any game in the series. So I know that Nier is... was a spin-off of the Drakengard series, or in Japan, the Dragon Dragoon. But Nier came out, and it was an action role-playing game, it had a very deep, personal kind of story, with lots of kind of ethical connotations, and apparently the actual gameplay itself wasn't too good. Nier was successful. It made good sales, but Square Enix kind of picked up the property. It was originally made by Cavia, I believe the company is called. Anyway, it was picked up by Square Enix, and they wanted to make the game, but they wanted to kind of tighten up the combat, like make it more interesting combat. And there was a company around at the time that had made some very good games known as Bayonetta and Metal Gear Rising, and that is Platinum. Platinum Games, so they teamed up with Platinum, became a Square Enix / Platinum joint, and thus Nier Automata was born. And Nier Automata, that's it's kind of hard to say, but anyway. Automata is a is an open world version of Nier. So you'll start out, you start out in a kind of tutorial section where you learn how to move and slash a sword and kill a few robots, and you get put into some pretty tight spots early on, which is kind of indicative of what you're going to be facing in later stages. Yeah, once the opening area is finished, then you're released basically into this forested city. It's kind of a city just taken over by nature, and there are tiny little patches of robots in there as well. You can go fight them if you want, or just explore, and that's what I ended up doing for about 3 hours. There's all kinds of little itty bitty things that you can do. It is an open world game, but at the same time, it's not ridiculously large in scale. So you can get from one area to another in a pretty short time. It's nothing like Final Fantasy 15 or Grand Theft Auto 5 or anything like that. If you want to go over to the desert, it's just a quick hop and things like that. And of course, fast travel opens up later in the game. Combat was one of the big changes they wanted to make to the series, and combat is amazing. It feels super smooth. There's all kinds of combos you can use, you can equip different weapons, different swords and fist weapons and things like that. You can hook one into you can hook two weapons up at one time. One is kind of your light weapon and one is a heavy. And you build combos off of those, and you can have two sets at any given time, and you can switch between those sets. So if you find certain weapon types work against different enemies better, then you can quickly swap those out, and that's pretty cool. Then you also have a little pod with you, and your pod has a kind of special weapon all on its own. For me, that's the laser, but it can also do things like create walls of spears or barriers around yourself. And nifty things like that. So, all kinds of good stuff in the combat. Like, it feels super smooth. You can go straight from just running up to an enemy to full-on combat, without any kind of wait. It's just really nice to get in there and smash some robots. Story-wise, I will say that, I was completely unprepared for exactly what Nier had to offer because, like I said, I had never played the original game, and this is a game by Yoko Taro, who is a rather odd man himself, and he makes some odd decisions in his games. For example, I've heard, again, I've never played the game. I've heard that in the first Nier, there is an entire dream sequence that plays out in the form of a text adventure in a video game. Yeah, you play Nier Automata, and there are definite parts where things will kind of shift in ways that you aren't completely expecting. For example, the most common kind of thing that will happen is you'll be running along and the camera will suddenly shift to a side view, and instead of getting a completely free 3D world where you can jump around in multiple directions, you can only move left and right and up and down. It kind of changes up how you play combat because you can't do things like sidestep dodging. You can only go back and forward, so you have to be a lot more careful with how you're going to deal with things. It's really awesome, and the story itself is it goes into the ethical places that the first game went. This is a sequel to Nier, it goes a lot into what it means to kind of be human and how to become human. Again, without spoiling too much, apparently this is set in the super far future where something has happened and humans don't live on Earth anymore, and they live on the moon instead. But they want to come back to Earth, but they can't. because there's things on Earth that prevent that. So these androids are sent down to basically fight in their stead. And that is who you play. You play as 2B, who is an android, and you beat up the things that are keeping humans from coming to Earth. And it all has, it has a very odd vibe. So there's definite moments where, it just seems kind of creepy, the way people will talk or act. For example, the lead commander, it finishes every kind of broadcast with "Glory to mankind," or I mean, of course, being a human myself, of course I would prefer that mankind be the dominant race on Earth, but at the same time, just to hear the, maybe not the words itself, "glory to mankind," but the way everything is said has this totalitarian kind of dictatorial vibe to it. But at the same time, you'll talk to operators or other soldiers and they'll be very bright and cheerful, and it kind of balances like this lighthearted feel with the heavy messages that's going on. And that's a really good thing to do. Obviously, you don't want to come off as too serious, or you especially in a game like this, it's going to fall flat. So it's very good. There's a lot of humor, or just a lot of levity in it, and it's definitely worth picking up. So one other thing I have to mention is the amazing soundtrack that Nier has. So every track that comes up, I get a little shiver. Like, it just feels really good to hear every new piece of music. And there's kind of like Final Fantasy XV did, there's a really good effort to kind of alter the music based on what's happening or where you are or even who you're talking to or what you're doing. The same track, you might hear a nice little ambient tone playing, but then when you get to the biggest section of a certain area, that music will swell up and it will come in with a vocal track as well. And then let's say you need to change your gear, so you go into the pause menu, you'll press it and the music will kind of go down, and it makes like a kind of odd effect where it sounds like the music is coming from a box or maybe like a room down the hall, so that you kind of have pushed away the experience for just a little bit, and then you come back and it swells back up again, and it's a really interesting experience. So I really love how they played with the music in this game, and every track is just great so far. So definitely, Neo and Nier are both worth a look. I can't believe how many awesome games there are this year. Horizon is coming out next week. And on that note, why don't we go ahead and talk about games that are coming out next week? So I've talked about Neo and Nier, both of those. Get them. Yeah, those are, I mean, the year is young, but those are already GOTY contenders. Anyway, next week we have a selection of really good titles. So your plate is going to be full if you are a fan of expansive games. So I said expansive, but also expensive games, because you gotta shell out the bucks for all these. But Horizon Zero Dawn is coming up for PS4. That's looking amazing from everything I hear. Can't wait to get my hands on that. Torment: Tides of Numenera. That was a Kickstarter project, and it is the not sequel but kind of successor to Planescape Torment, which in a lot of circles is considered to be a game that has some of the best writing. So that that is something you can look forward to. It's a full-on RPG, so that's going to take another 60, 70 hours. I'm not sure I'll have time for that. Constructor HD is coming to PC, PS4, and Xbox One. Musou Stars, if you're in Japan, that's coming out. So Musou Stars is the Omega Force game that's kind of Dynasty Warriors with... basically all of Koei Tecmo's kind of stars. So you got Dead or Alive characters, and you've got even Neo, William, the main character, is going to be in there. You also have Samurai Warriors. You're going to have Nobunaga Oda. Deception is in there with Millennia and Legrina. And yeah, Ninja Gaiden, you're going to have Ryu Hayabusa. I figured that's going to be a game only if you're a fan of the Dynasty Warriors kind of game. So there's that. And then on Friday the 3rd, everything is kind of coming together with the Nintendo Switch launch. And the Switch lineup so far, there might be a few like last-minute announcements. But so far we have 1-2 Switch, which is, again, not a pack-in, which is just a terrible decision on Nintendo's part. 1-2 Switch. I Am Setsuna. I'm not going to announce whether these are ports or remakes or different editions, but some of them are. Just keep that in mind. Just Dance 2017. Snipper Clips. Human Resource Machine. Little Inferno. Skylanders Imaginators. Yeah, something like that. Let's see. The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth, Super Bomberman R, The Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, which is going to be the big pick, obviously, and World of Goo. World of Goo. Wow. That's a classic. But, so that is the games, as well as just a couple more, sorry. We have A King's Tale, Final Fantasy XV. This was originally a pre-order bonus for Final Fantasy XV, I believe from GameStop. I could be wrong. But it's a kind of side-scrolling beat-em-up in the vein of something like Streets of Rage or Battletoads. And it's even got like retro-inspired graphics. It's set... I don't remember how many, but decades before the story of Final Fantasy XV, and it's presented like a bedtime story from Regis to Noctis. So there's that. I can't imagine it's going to be very expensive because it was a pre-order bonus. So we have ACA, that's the Arcade Classic Archives, I believe. Neo Geo NAM 1975. So there you go. Dying Reborn. Not a clue what this is, but it's got a man with a fish head for the cover. Forma 8 is a kind of a Metroidvania. Ghostblade HD. Grim Legends, The Forsaken Bride. We have The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing, the extended edition. Stranger of Sword City Revisited. PS2 Classic Suikoden 4. And we have the retail version of The Walking Dead, the Telltale series, the Season 3. Now, all episodes have not been released yet, so I'm honestly kind of curious how this works out. But yeah, you can have the disc, and then you're going to have to download episodes anyway. But anyway, the last one is WRC6. I forget what that is. World Rally Championship? I'm going to have to look that up. I'm crazy. I believe it is World Rally Championship. Yes, I am correct. World Rally Championship 6. And those are your games coming out next week. Now, obviously, the Switch is probably going to dominate the news for the next few weeks. So look forward to that. We will have our own. I've got mine on pre-order. I know Chris and Jason don't have theirs, but you'll hear plenty of news coming from me. And if you're looking forward to that news, then you can go on over to our website at kaijupop.com. You can find out all kinds of news and reviews and videos over there. Or you can go to our social media sites. We have Twitter at kaijupop or YouTube, just kaijupop. So please go on over to those sites and like and subscribe. We really appreciate you guys doing that. And, you know, of course, comment. Let us know what you think or ask any questions. And you can also follow me personally on Twitter at Kyoshi Banzai, and I would really appreciate that as well. So thank you guys for listening. This has been episode 225 of the Popcast, and that is gonna do it. So goodbye.